When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
And are you saying that there's evidence of collusion? Because everybody's trying to convert wishful thinking into hard evidence, and they haven't been able to do that.
I'm convinced there was communication. I'm convinced there were meetings. I'm convinced that there were financial entanglements.
It doesn't necessarily show that there was collusion in the scheme, but it shows that Don Jr. was collusion curious.
Hello and welcome to TrumpCast. I'm Virginia Heffernan. So I want to say a word about emotions and soft emo subjects today. Take it down a bit. Because when you ask people, even commenters, for their true, deepest, not for the microphone take on this siege, on this administration, something kind of moving happens. They don't know. Will there be impeachment, a resignation? Is there ongoing treason? Are we a nation of rabid white supremacists now? I don't know. And that's kind of the beauty of this period. Like, people who are paid to know and not stutter don't know. And at the risk of sounding too Super Soul Sunday about that, you know, that beginner's mind has something kind of miraculous to it. Because as our mores and democracy are being tested, as it seems at times to be all coming apart, it's like that movie Das Boot. You only know what a ship is as it comes apart. So now we get a complete audit of what citizenship means. What happens when a businessman and his free market instincts and his greed meet the branding opportunity that was once quaintly known as public service? What is or ought to be the role of Congress? What is the military's role when we have an incompetent and corrupt president? What about the courts? What is patriotism? And when you get out of your dogmatic slumbers, and I'm saying I was in those slumbers for most of the Obama administration, when I thought upward and onward with neoliberal globalism and the arc of history bends toward justice, you wake up to the fragility of the American experiment with all its pacts, explicit and tacit. You really do feel kind of awake. I mean, there's insomnia, of course, but I also mean you get a certain vitality. I went to a march for truth on Trump Russia a few months back, and I found myself, you know, talking about truth for one, which made me feel like a truther, but also shouting, you know, the normal stuff, like this is what democracy looks like. It was only when the whoop went up, USA, USA, that I knew I was in a weird place in my life. I mean, I had sort of lived all my decades as someone that would never shout USA, USA, but I was right there for the first time chanting for my country. And for some reason, I didn't stop. So I know I get Pollyanna-ish, but I also don't know. Impeachment? I hope so, but I don't know. Indictment? Handcuffs? A reassertion of the rule of law? A hard end to the national nightmare that makes Watergate look like a fleeting anxiety dream about overcooking the salmon? I mean, of course I want those things, but I don't know. So now I've parked my optimism in the hope offered by not knowing, by touching the things that have given life ballast all this time, but which I'm only now grateful for having time to find out what citizenship is. And of course, picturing Trump in handcuffs being led to a supermax. That's part of the fantasy, too. I mean, sorry, God, sometimes you just feel vindictive. So today, my guest is Matthew Miller, formerly of the Department of Justice and currently MSNBC's Justice and Security Analyst. He's always open to exploring ideas, but he also brings some answers on the state of the investigations into Trump, his people, and l'affaire Russe. We even hearken back to everybody's favorite nut job, James Comey, and that vexed thing known as the 2016 election.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on a whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
This episode is supported by FX's Clipped, the scandalous story of the 2014 Clippers owner's racist remarks captured on tape and heard around the world. The series charts the tape's impact on a dysfunctional basketball organization striving to win against their reputation as the most cursed team in the league. Starring Lawrence Fishburne, Jackie Weaver, Cleopatra Coleman, and Ed O'Neill. FX's Clipped, streaming June 4th, only on Hulu.
Joining me on the line is Matthew Miller. He was at the Department of Justice, and now he's the MSNBC Justice and Security Analyst. Welcome, Matt.
Great to be here.
All right. Hashtag James Comey is back today as a Russian talking point. I mean, Trump talking point. Let's briefly talk about Comey. So this former FBI director has had many roles in our political melodrama. He was a character actor. Then he was mildly nauseous and extremely nauseating as a villain who sunk Hillary Clinton's campaign. And then he seemed like a hero who stood up to Trump and whose firing became a pretext for the Mueller investigation. So yesterday, the White House says that the Department of Justice should prosecute Comey for leaks or at least look into it. You didn't seem to like that idea on Twitter.
No, not really. And, you know, it's really been going on for 3 days, and it kind of felt like a casual comment when Sarah Sanders first said it on Monday, like maybe she did something on her own and, you know, maybe got off script. But by yesterday, it was clear that the White House was doubling, I guess it's tripling down when you do it 3 days in a row on this, and even were suggesting specific statutes that he might have violated. The whole thing is crazy. I mean, first, just on the facts, there was no way that anything he did with respect to leaking memos or testifying to Congress was a violation of law. You might be able to argue that, you know, those memos were, you know, confidential information and he shouldn't have made them public. There's a good counter argument that was a whistleblowing activity. But you could argue they're inappropriate. You cannot in any sense argue that they're a violation of law. They weren't classified. They don't violate the Privacy Act, which is the thing that Sanders said yesterday. It's just not true. But yeah, I think the more disturbing thing about this is you have the White House suggesting in its official capacity that a witness against the president in a criminal investigation, maybe the chief witness against the president in a criminal investigation, should be investigated and potentially prosecuted by the Department of Justice under any circumstance that is a complete abuse of White House power. Add to it the fact that they're suggesting he be investigated and prosecuted for something that it was in no way a violation of criminal law. It is a real abuse of power by a White House that has been kind of crossing this line with the Department of Justice since the beginning.
So, but if this is at all or even smacks of political retaliation, why are they not just jumping back into obstruction of justice?
Yeah, so that's the thing. I mean, there is, you know, you could, I think, make the argument that it's obstruction of justice. I think it's a hard thing to do just based on Sanders saying it from the podium.
Mm-hmm.
But if we find out that, in addition to Sanders saying it from the podium, the president called the attorney general or the White House counsel or the chief of staff or anybody else called the attorney general and said, look, we really think you need to do this. You need to make Comey squirm a little bit. Then I think you would start to look at obstruction of justice. But I think that's one of the key questions for the White House. And it's a question for Sessions, who, you know, is really just been out of public view throughout a lot of this, is what does he think this is appropriate for the White House to do? And to that important question, is it just this kind of foaming at the mouth from the podium, or are they actually taking steps behind the scenes to go after Comey?
I keep thinking of Bannon saying, Steve Bannon saying to Charlie Rose that he thought this was that firing Comey was the stupidest move in the history of the human race. Or no, I think he walked it back to modern political history. In
right.
any case, he said, I didn't get whether he meant, and maybe you can speculate, that obstructing justice was stupid because it got him under investigation for obstructing justice, or if he thinks this wasn't obstruction of justice, but firing him looked like it, or if this is just a way to show down with Jared Kushner and the Cucks who supported Trump in that decision to fire.
Complicated to untangle with Bannon.
Yeah. Maybe we'll leave it at that. But what I do think is interesting is this: these tautologies of like it was stupid to obstruct justice because he obstructed justice. You know, like it's also stupid to hold up a convenience store because sometimes the police
sometimes
arrest you for holding up a convenience store. So I have to go back to the terrible brain breaking year of 2016 for a second and say that, like a lot of us, you were really tough on Comey for how he handled Clinton in the spring and fall of that year. And now he's kind of a hero. I mean, how do you think of him right now? Has he stabilized in your mind as a hero, as a egomaniac?
No. Not a hero. I think he certainly enjoys being the center of attention. I think you can look at Jim Comey, a lot of Jim Comey's actions, going all the way back to the Bush administration, where he was the Deputy Attorney General, and see that he does a lot of things kind of through this God complex that he has for himself. He often thinks of himself as the only, you know, noble person in the room, sometimes the only, you know, ethical person left in Washington. And I think it was that, and that, I should say, that God complex, you know, as you might imagine, turns into self-righteousness. And I think that's what motivated him to do what he did in the Clinton investigation. It wasn't, I don't think, a partisan motivation. It was just his self-righteousness led him off track. And I think two things can be true about Comey. One, he made huge mistakes last year, and I think those were actually firing mistakes. I think, you know, if someone actually took a look at what he did, you know, if Rod Rosenstein had come in his first day in office and not talked to the president about why the president wanted to fire him and just done a review and written that memo, I wouldn't have had any beef with it.
The original, gallantry to Hillary Clinton memo where Trump was her white knight protecting her dastardly James Comey.
And look, Rod Rosenstein was in the department. He was the U.S. Attorney for Maryland last year when all this was going on. I'm sure he believed everything in that memo because just about everyone in the Department of Justice agreed that Comey had acted inappropriately. You could argue whether it's a firing offense or not. I think it was, but you could argue, well, it was inappropriate. He should be disciplined, but not fired. But that's debatable. But, you know, obviously the memo was a farce because that's not why he was really fired.
Yeah, right. Not an ethical paragon and doesn't sell himself that way, our president. So now there was talk a few weeks ago, and, you know, as usual, we're in light years and Trump time. So a few weeks ago, you may barely remember, but about Trump firing Robert Mueller. Mm-hmm. Not so much now. What's your sort of gut feeling?
Look, I think, you know, we saw a report in Axios yesterday that he continues to rage behind the scenes about Bob Mueller and to talk about it being a witch hunt. I think very much he probably wants to fire Mueller and has been talked out of it. It was clear, you know, when the reports first surfaced and then when I rumbled around for a few weeks over the summer that he wanted to get rid of him and just decided the cost was too high and it might not make the investigation go away anyways. But look, that seems to be, you know, why he's mad at Jeff Sessions, why he continues to be mad at Jeff Sessions, because Jeff Sessions, you know, signing off on Mueller's firing wasn't obstructing justice enough. He also needed to then step in later and prevent Mueller from being appointed or somehow prevent, you know, fire Mueller. It clearly continues to be a source of unhappiness. And I think one of the things that's been consistent about Trump throughout this investigation is every time the heat turns up, he takes steps to try to thwart the investigation or to try to obstruct it. Sometimes those steps are very open and public, you know, firing Comey, calling it a witch hunt, attacking the people that work for Mueller as partisans. Sometimes they're private, you know, trying to get Comey himself to back off, trying to get the other intelligence officials to interfere with the FBI. And so I, you know, one thing I think we can safely predict is that, you know, the heat is going to get, the investigation is going to get a lot hotter before it's over. There's no way that Bob Mueller isn't going to want to talk to Donald Trump Jr. He may even subpoena him to the grand jury. He's going to want to talk to Kushner. It's going to get a lot hotter for the president. And it's hard to see him not following the pattern he's followed before and lashing out. And I think we still have at least one major public crisis that he will provoke. And that could be pardons. And it could be trying to fire Bob Mueller in some way. It's just not in Trump's personality to kind of sit back and, you know, follow rules, follow norms, respect the rule of law, and let this thing go where it's going to go. It's just not who he is.
Some of the GOP leadership has said that they would move to impeach, or it would be the beginning of the end of Trump's presidency if he moved to fire Mueller. So that maybe is on his mind, although who knows.
Yeah, but he doesn't always, you know, that's very good advice. And I think they were sending clear signals, but, you know, he doesn't always listen to that type of thing. And
look, now he's a Democrat, so he's got to hold different people to answer to.
And look, if you're Donald Trump, the one lesson you've learned about the Republican leadership in Congress is they'll say a bunch of tough things about you, and then he'll go act however he wants, and they'll cave anyway.
That's so right.
He wouldn't be wrong to not respect that they'll cave to him in the end.
I've been working on a version of if you're happy and you know it, clap your hands, which is if you're concerned and you know it, just impeach.
That's great.
So Trump, I like the idea of, I mean, every image of Trump raging behind closed doors, I just think of him pacing and being like, who will rid me of these meddlesome priests? The meddlesome priests seem to be here to stay. Does he talk, do you think, that way about Schiff and Warner and the congressional and Senate investigations?
Oh, he probably does, but he might understand at least that there's nothing he can do about that. Although it wouldn't surprise me to find out if at times, times he's talked to the committee chairman, but we know he's talked to McConnell and complained about McConnell not doing more to protect him. I think he wanted McConnell to do more to shut down the Intelligence Committee investigation. So he probably expects it from Schiff and those guys, but I guarantee he's unhappy with Burr and at times with Grassley. He's probably not too unhappy with Nunes, except for Nunes being incompetent. Nunes has done everything he could to protect the president, but did it in such an incompetent way, actually made more problems for him.
Nunes is his own show, but yes. Another astounding reality show character in the mix. Let's talk about the conflicts among the three investigations. I hate that there are three investigations and have to be three, but that's because I'd just like to see some norms violated up in here, I think. why can't they just give all the discovery to Mueller and everybody answers to Mueller? Why does it have to get, you know, divided like this? I know it's pro forma, but maybe you can tell us what the history of having these separate investigations is and why we do it, and then also what the conflicts are.
Yeah. So, I mean, it really all stems from the fact that the various actors in this game have different priorities. The Department of Justice traditionally, and this is true for Mueller as a special counsel inside the Department of Justice, what they want out of these investigations are convictions. They want to send people to jail. The Hill, on the other hand, typically wants attention. Now, sometimes that's, you know, attention for noble purposes to, you know, conduct oversight and expose wrongdoing, or to shed light on things that lead to new policymaking. But let's be honest, the people in these jobs are politicians. Oftentimes, attention for attention's sake is the main goal. So that will lead to conflicts in any investigation when the Hill wants to do things. Oftentimes, they'll want to depose witnesses, or they'll want to have witnesses speak publicly or appear at public hearings. And DOJ will be really concerned about that because, you know, if a witness goes and testifies publicly, he's just told the world what he knows, and the world includes other potential targets of investigation who now know what the Justice Department might know about them. So this one's a little different, though, because usually in these cases, you assume at least that that everyone on the Hill is a good faith actor, right? That everyone has the same goals. And we can't really assume that here. I think Warner and Schiff clearly want to get to the bottom of what happened. Burr, I think, for the most part, wants to get to the bottom of what happened. But we can't forget about what happened earlier this year when, you know, Burr did the White House's bidding and was trying to get on the phone with reporters on background to knock down stories about collusion. I think he kind of touched the hot stove and got burned, and so has learned his lesson. But, you know, it bears watching.
I think, some of the more conspiratorial on Twitter, not that you've ever run into them, but yes, say that Burr is on sides now, that somehow he was brought around and he's part of Operation Take Trump Down now. But who knows?
Who knows? Yeah, who knows? It bears watching. Nunes obviously was not a good faith actor from the beginning, and we could talk hours about him. I think he's kind of the Wile E. Coyote of American politics. You know, everything he does blows up in his face. He always, you know, he comes up with a scheme to get Susan Rice, Samantha Power, and Barack Obama, and he ends up with an anvil on his own head. His replacement, Michael Conway from Texas, seems to be doing a good job so far, but, mm-hmm. you know, we won't really know till the end. And then Chuck Grassley, who's kind of, you know, jumped into this in the last few months, at times, you know, is going after Donald Trump Jr., but has also been relentlessly attacking the deputy director of the FBI and trying to figure out why they were involved in looking at the dossier last year. So, you know, Grassley's motives are not entirely pure in this either. So that leads you to situations like this conflict over the testimony of Donald Trump Jr., or I should say the interviews that Donald Trump Jr. And Paul Manafort had with Hill committees, where Grassley now, you know, is declining to provide Mueller the transcript of that interview. Mm-hmm. The Intelligence Committee has not provided the transcript of Manafort's interview. And, you know, these are big conflicts. Mueller needs these transcripts. I mean, let's be honest. The most important of these investigations is Mueller's investigation. Mm-hmm. He has the biggest tools to make people talk, and he, unlike the Hill, has the ability to actually, you know, prosecute people and you know, if they're convicted, throw them in jail. And he has the ability to flip people and, you know, work his way up the chain to find out
what
the president
knew. That gets back to our favorite, the Dreeben hire, which we discussed
exactly.
The last time we were here, the hiring of Michael Dreeben, a notoriously skilled flipper of witnesses. And that, you know, the Mueller's team is just very different from senators and congressmen who just want to have their have you no shame moment. And, you know, all this brio, they're not working in skiffs and they're not prosecutors. So, I mean, why not just cooperate with Mueller?
Because for a couple of reasons. One, I think not everyone is acting in, you know, complete good faith. But two, they have egos. Big egos in the case of senators. And so they want to pursue their investigations. And three, you know, they do have a little bit different charge. I mean, they mm-hmm. do have a policymaking charge. Part of this at the end of this is there might be policy, you know, new policies that need to be enacted to try to prevent Russian interference in the next election. And that will be the job of Capitol Hill. But I also think there is an important job of the Senate. You know, let's fast forward all the way to the end here, and if Bob Mueller does find criminality on the part of the president, it's not completely settled law that he can't indict him, but I think it's unlikely that he would. I think he would say that that's a job for Congress. So Congress needs to have done some of its own investigation, mm-hmm. and they need to have held public hearings so the American people can see, you know, what exactly it is that's happened. That's one thing that Bob Mueller can't do. You know, he can't have Donald Trump Jr. testify in public and mm-hmm. answer a bunch of questions about what happened in that June 20, 2016 meeting. You know, if there's ever eventually a trial, he could call him to testify, but that's a much different atmosphere than a congressional hearing. So when you think about impeachment as much a legal act as a political act, you know, and one that has to be obviously done by Congress, there is a role for these congressional committees, even if they're not the committees that would deal with impeachment ultimately, to be laying the public groundwork for what did happen. And right now we've mostly seen them doing things behind closed doors, but public hearings are where they can have a real impact that Mueller can't.
You know, it also, I mean, they have, once again, back to Comey, if Trump hadn't fired Comey and hadn't triggered the Mueller investigation that way, we would still be having these committees investigate the sort of more neutral question of Russian interference in the election slash, you know, as I heard people on the right talk about it, they wanted a 9/11 style commission to talk about how the Russians do this, even how they do it in France. And that is, as you say, a very separate agenda, you know, from Mueller's.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a big question about, you know, the responsibility of you know, social media companies. I mean, Facebook obviously has gotten a lot of attention. There are huge questions about what they ought to do to police traffic in the Facebook network. Same thing is true for Twitter. And that ultimately, you know, those aren't criminal acts on the part of Facebook and Twitter. It's not really something Mueller can have a role in, but it's a huge question for Congress.
It's going to be one of the most interesting parts of this investigation, and hopefully will lead to some reforms, real reforms in social media. But in the meantime, I will see you on Twitter. Thanks a lot for being here.
Of course. Always enjoy it.
And that's the show for today. But before we take off, are you following TrumpCast on Twitter? We're on there, at Real TrumpCast. We're on the cusp of 10,000 followers. The cusp. So go follow us there to keep up with the show and all the latest updates for future live shows, book clubs, etc. Also, we're in Austin, Texas next weekend. Join us at the Texas Tribune Festival on Saturday, September 23rd at 7:30 p.m. at the Texas Union Theater. We'll be there with some very special guests. And if you can't make it to Texas, how about San Francisco, another great American city? TrumpCast will be there live from the Norse Theater on Tuesday, November 14th. Come one, come all, and join us at the TrumpCast Circus. For tickets and information, go to slate.com/live. That is slate.com/live. TrumpCast is produced by Jason DeLeon, and I'm Virginia Heffernan.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hi, I'm Josh Levine. My podcast, The Queen, tells the story of Linda Taylor. She was a con artist, a kidnapper, and maybe even a murderer. She was also given the title The Welfare Queen, and her story was used by Ronald Reagan to justify slashing aid to the poor. Now, it's time to hear her real story. Over the course of 4 episodes, you'll find out what was done to Linda Taylor, what she did to others, and what was done in her name.
The great lesson of this, for me, is that people will come to their own conclusions based on what their prejudices are.
Subscribe to The Queen on Apple Podcasts or wherever you're listening right now.